There. I'm now recording, even though I lost the first 15 minutes, explaining it to myself, you notice, explaining how to compute the unit vectors U1 and U2 in problem 13.20. Okay? Yes. Right, for a stereo problem. Say that again. Absolutely. Yes, R and C are the image coordinates. In principle, there's an R1 C1 and an R2 C2, one for each camera. The C is different for each camera. We project a ray in space, and the big thing is to basically figure out where are they the closest together. Because due to a variety of factors, they will not precisely intersect. And this is actually the algorithm that's given in 13.3.3. I'm not going to beyond the U and the V, I'm sorry, beyond the U1 and U2, talk much about how that actual formula was derived. It's simply whenever these two things get close enough together, wherever it is, we draw, it's perpendicular to both. Now, obviously, I can't draw 3D on a two-dimensional blackboard, so I had to bend the vector here to make it to draw it, but it's perpendicular to both. That will be the point of closest approach, and then their argument is you just pick halfway. Now, P1 in that formula is any point that's known on these rays. So the easiest thing, as I said in the hint, is why not call, for example, that P1? As long as it's a point on this, you're okay. Yes. The camera is always pointing in Z, and the X, Y are the transverse. That is a common convention. Yes. I may not have made that clear earlier. But yes, we always use Z for the perpendicular. For the perpendicular plane.
In this problem, the locals are in converse of an object.
So you may have to translate your coordinates out there. You know, if, for example, you have, because if you're given some object or something. No. This right here that we did here is just simply where do they intersect? Okay. Now, this implies that there is some commonality of knowledge of world coordinate system. I think that's what you were saying. Well, when we really calibrate cameras, what we usually want to know in a 3D system, this additional vector, either it's the same world coordinate system for each, or I need to know the vector that connects the two world coordinate systems. And actually, this is more than just a vector, because there's an orientation. This is just a translation, and then I have my angular orientation. Now, the standard thing that people think of is that we just have two cameras, flat, they're in the same plane, and we might just have a lateral offset. In practice, a lot of times the cameras are tilted. And that's to, if you've got a particular region of space that you're looking at, That's to optimize the cameras to look at that region of space, because where do you get your most errors? When R and C are off to the edges. And by tilting your cameras in at what you're looking at, you center them. Did that make sense? A couple of you are looking a little puzzled. Okay. Can I go to color now, or? Okay. I might give you a week off, by the way, on projects, because I'm writing your midterm project. Well, I can tell you effectively what your midterm is. You know what you did already with the early video off of DD, where you were you were doing the edges. I want you to find and label. No, I want you to identify the lane markers. I'm not interested in anything else. I want the lane markers. And you're going to be allowed to use any technique. Well, are they going to be typing at the keyboard? The question was, can we use monkeys? And, if they're productively coupled, why not? Will they beat CMU? Maybe I should erase that one. But, I'll get the color up here. But no, that's why it's going to be a midterm project. And I'm going to show you, hopefully in today's lecture, some things that you can actually use for identifying and labeling lines. The first thing is color. Because oftentimes, lane markers are colored. It could be white or it could be yellow. Whereas, you know, if you look at edges of cars, trees, whatever, there's all kinds of other colors involved. If you convert it to just grayscale, there may not be enough information there. So you may have to adopt a multi-prong approach. You can use grayscale to find edges, but you may have to use color to figure out what fills in between the edges. Okay. Whoops, that's not the right one. Yeah, this is the wrong one for this class. That's the 210 one. Oh, no. It says I don't have permission. All right, I moved the file. I think this is it now. By the way, I've scanned all of these color lectures in, and I had to do these in color. So, since it seemed appropriate, and I'll be putting that on the website probably tomorrow. Okay. Now, let's get to where we want to be. Okay, if I'm not mistaken, that's where we were the last time. We were looking at color images, and we were looking at them in different spaces. And we're going to use this for some color adjustments, and that's really the only big thing. And let's see, RGB, that's the standard one. And that's the one, by the way, we're probably easiest able to think in. Okay? U, saturation, and intensity. We think in terms of intensity. We do not always think in terms of U and saturation. I'm going to show you how we can do some image processing both here and here. We will not do any image processing in CMYK. CMYK, its primary usage is printing. Now, there are other different standards. Anyone heard of YUV? Some of you have. Television, broadcast. There's all kinds of other schemes where, and I guess in some sense you might say they're more akin to HSI. There's an intensity, usually, not always, and then there's some combination of colors here. But we're not going to talk much about that. Now, what we were doing the last time I had to have chalk to write that. Ah, did you bring that or was that on the board? Oh, I was going to say, I'd be very impressed if you brought that. That's real preparedness. Okay, but just to show you some of the kinds of thinking, because what we're going to go through here is, first of all, how do you correct all the color in bad photos that you have? Okay, but that also relates to image processing, and the simple thing is, how do you change the intensity? If I simply want to lighten or darken an overall color image, not a black and white color. I mean, you know how to do it with black and white. You just take whatever the pixel value is, multiply it by whatever constant you're going to scale it by, and you do that for every pixel in the picture. So if you multiply it by a large number, it increases the value, that makes it brighter. If you multiply it by a small number, that should decrease the value and make it darker. So that's all intensity modification is in black and white. Now, the easiest one is, believe it or not, HSI. You've got an intensity image. And you can sort of look at this color image and this intensity image and say, yes, that basically does look like a black and white version of the color. And that's a very good thing. And the way our book's notation is just to multiply the intensity by some constant, and we're going to use K. So basically, you just multiply K times the intensity, the original intensity. That's all. That's pretty simple. In RGB space, okay, RGB space is not that difficult. The thing is, how do you define intensity in RGB space in the first place? How about the average color? It's just R plus G plus B divided by 3. So, in essence, by the way, what you're doing is averaging. And this is actually fairly important, as we're going to talk about in image processing a little bit later, because, well, I won't jump the gun there. Okay, how would you change the intensity then for an RGB image? You're going to have to change the red, the green, and the blue You have to multiply each one by a constant, k. And what will happen is you'd have a kr, a kg, a kd, okay, and that would be for I prime, and then you end up with, factor out the k, r plus g plus b over 3, and that was your original I. Now, where things get a little more interesting is, what do you do in CMY space? And we haven't talked much about CMY space. And one of the key things, and I probably didn't really emphasize it enough, is remember, these are complementary colors. I really mean they're complementary. For example, cyan is 1 minus R. So basically, the easy thing to do is I just plug 1 minus R, 1 minus G, and 1 minus B in to my formula here for RGB and see what happens. And it turns out, because it's got that 1 in here, that propagates into the formula for RGB, and you end up that it's going to be 1 minus 1 third C plus M plus Y. Uh-oh. This is real ominous. I haven't had this one yet. Oh, okay. That's better. Okay. So, but this thing is important to know. The 1 minus R, 1 minus G, 1 minus B. Yes. Well, actually, yes. And, No. If I just plug that in, I haven't scaled it yet. Sorry. You jumped one ahead of me, because what you do is you're going to have to scale each component. So it would be K times C, for example. Whoops. There I go and break that good chalk you gave me. So it's K times C plus 1 minus K. Okay. So I have to do, that's for the new C. That would be for the new M. And for the new Y. Whoops. Don't worry. In this course, you're not, well, at least as far as I know, I can't imagine what you're going to be doing CMY processing for. Okay. Now, if you're doing photos, you might want to mess around with it, you know, print it stuff. Anyone in here work at American Greetings? Okay. You didn't have to answer anyway. We don't want to embarrass anyone that's working for a living. But, because, remember, first of all, what you're doing when you're printing is you're putting these on top of each other. It's not like we're shining them through each other. So think about it. If I put, like, something that's going to be reflecting red, okay, and then I put something that's reflecting yellow on top of it, that can mess up the reflection of red. And so what happens if you really get into the pigments and stuff, you don't get a really good black. It's really hard. You have to basically design a separate black. Well, that's why actually a number of printers have different grays. But you can get grays with CM and Y. Well, I don't know how accurately, but definitely you cannot get a good black. Well, no, it's a CMYK, but then if you look at inkjet printers now, you know, we've gotten a deep black, we've gotten maybe a lighter black, you know, we've gone to, what, 8 different inks? And the big thing is, since they're on top of each other, it's not like they're adding, like we're transmitting. Because glass, you know, through glass, things just go through. But in this reflective mode, and because you're usually dealing with these organic molecules, the interaction is pretty complicated. In fact, remember when we did the CIE diagram? And if you just have your RGB, really nice. But look at that really funny looking shape we had for a typical printer. No, that's a real art to come up with good dyes, good printing colors. Now you can calibrate them to each other. That's a little bit different. Okay, but it's hard to get deep saturated colors. It's hard to get blacks because they're interacting a lot more than they would if they were transmitting through something. It's they're reflecting. Okay. Now, we start doing some image processing. And by the way, the book's wrong. We'll see if you can figure out where. Adjusting the intensity of an image using color transformation. That's what we just did. There is the original, and we decreased the intensity by 30%. And now, let's see if this makes sense to us. And if you've played with Photoshop or a bunch of other image processing programs, you've probably seen things like this. This is the relationship between, say, R and R prime. And if you're going to change the intensity in RGB space, what did we do? We just multiplied each component by K, right? So when it gets to 1, which would be its maximum value, you'd get the value of K, right? And so this applies to R, G, and B. This is the transfer relationship between the original color and then the transform. Oh. Yes, they're due Monday. I was supposed to come up on the other screen. We'll give it 2 hours. Sorry. Hey, I use my iCal a lot, even though it won't sync with my iPod, but that's another story. I don't know why. That's a weird one. Anyway, HSI. Right here. Well, tell me. Yes, these are reversed. Okay, because we want to change I by multiplying it by K. H and S don't do anything. This would be great to give if I were, you know, really giving a class with an exam. This would be a great exam question. And now, you notice we sort of skipped over CMY? Anyone want to tell me, is that right or wrong? It's got a K in it. What do you think? Well, to change the intensity in CMY, what did I do over here? Does that formula match this one? Okay, we're going to go from a value of C equals 0, which would be down here. So if C equals 0, the first term drops out, and we've just got 1 minus K. Looks good. And if C equals 1, what do we have? K plus 1 minus K. So it's okay. But they were flipped in there. Okay. This is just one of the pictures in the book. I'm not going to say too much. It just shows all the complementary colors. We're primarily interested in the fact that cyan's the complement of red, magenta, and we use that, for example, cyan equals 1 minus R. And that will show up. Now, here's something a little more interesting. This is probably not useful for driving robots. This is probably more useful, well, I'm not quite sure what this is useful for other than an exam or homework question. Coming up with complementary colors. The idea is, but it shows that you can do color manipulation. And so the idea is, if you have an original color image, how would you generate a complementary color image? And this is by two different techniques. Okay? So the first one, and this also is to show you, it's different to do things in different domains. Just like we did over here with an intensity modification, we're doing a color transformation. If we do a complementary color, how do we do it? Notice, if I would do it like this, that would be an identity transformation. So if it went from 0 to 1 like that, okay, nothing would change. What I'm doing here is saying, okay, where I have no red, I want all cyan. And vice versa. In other words, I'm just implementing that 1 minus like I had over here. So if I have 0 red, I want to convert it to... Right. I mess up occasionally. That makes sense? I'm only complementary colors. I didn't say anything about intensity. And we're only doing this first step. These don't count yet. You're jumping ahead. Okay? Because these are two complementary images. This is done in RGB. In RGB, it's not too hard because all you do is 1 minus each of the colors, and it flips it fairly nicely. Now, why you would want to complement the color, I really don't know. But this is an exercise. Now, the question is, can you do an easy color complement in HSI? And the answer is no. Okay? And in fact, it turns out it's a homework problem in Gonzales, 6.18. The saturation doesn't change, but notice what happens. First of all, why do you have this big step in the U? Well, remember, because it's sort of an artificial thing. Because right where we had red, remember, as you turn around on in the H, it's just got a step from 0 to 1. So there's that artificial step, and notice what it does. I is tied into the picture as well. I'm not going to do the transformation. But remember, I think I showed you the last time a bunch of formulas which related HSI to RGB. You have to go back and do approximations of those transformation formula, and you'll get this. And by the way, it's on the website, not mine, Gonzales's. So if you really want it, it's fine. Now, how about something that's maybe a little more useful? Let's start doing some image processing. This, by the way, is for the same image. It's for the strawberries. These are strawberries right here. And what we're doing here, this is actually called color slicing. And the idea is that we're going to pick all the colors that are close to a particular color, and we'll either keep them as is or transform them to a common color. And everything else in the image gets converted to a neutral. And, for example, well, actually, they say it very nicely. Actually, I said it very nicely in the notes. It maps colors outside a range of interest to a neutral color. So it might be, if we knew a range of colors for asphalt, I'm just picking this at random. Okay, so if we knew the range of colors for asphalt, we could have it keep all of those colors, and it would convert everything else to yellow. Okay, so the question is, how do you do that? And there's a couple ways. The first thing is, and actually I think it's the next drawing coming up, now that I think about it. Let's take a look. Ooh, no. That's a couple. What we do is we look at our RGB space. Okay. And the idea is, and let's think, maybe these are the range of all the measured colors of asphalt. Or maybe they're the range of colors of yellow lines. Okay. What we might do, and there's a couple ways. One is I can draw a sphere around it. I can, for example, maybe pick an average, find the center, and say, okay, anything which is in this sphere will get coated yellow. Anything outside will get coated, how about gray? You could do something like that. In this case, what we're actually doing is strawberries, and I guess I'll follow that example. It's all a common red. It may look a little bit different, but it is all a common red. The reason it will look different is the shape is different. It's got different holes in it, etc. But this is color slicing. We haven't done anything except change the colors. Okay. Now, this raises some... let me finish one thing here. Computing spheres in color space may be computationally intensive. What you may simply want to do is do a cube around the center, because that's a heck of a lot easier to program. Whereas this, you have to do the sum of, you know, oh, and I'm going to come to derivatives. Pardon? Oh, yeah, oh, okay. Well, I'm being analytical. Yeah, if you want to be analytical, but what you want to do is usually make it simpler. And that's right. You could just do r squared plus g squared plus b squared. Absolutely. But sometimes, you see, we're perfectionists, and we want to know the real Euclidean distance. Sometimes we don't. But this raises a real interesting question that's going to come up. And that is, what constitutes a color difference? You notice we're picking regions in space. And I want to point out that there's going to be mathematical differences. Okay? And there's humanly perceptible differences. And they're not all the same. just remember this big CIE diagram, and it doesn't have the color in it, but I want to point out that sometimes color and the differences in color depend on what's around you. Sensors, cones, and rock, well, actually, our cones may get saturated. Okay, and are those all the same gray? Boy, what a leading question. Yes, they are. Okay. How about if I change the background? So, you have to stop and think about, are these all the same? And it turns out that the way, perceptual psychologists get into this, and I guess they actually probably take graduate students, they pay them for it, and they make them look at color charts, and they ask them, is this color the same as that one? Or they'll put them side by side. Do you see a difference? And the actual plotted results from that are shown here, but we exaggerated it here. And perceptual differences in colors, everything within each ellipse shows as the same color to a human observer. So I would see no difference in colors within that ellipse there. I would see no difference in colors here. And you notice it is not uniform. So you have to think about, I'm going to be leading up, obviously, to color differences, to color derivatives and stuff. And depending on the background and even the absolute color in the first place, you can get perceptually different results. And things look different when you illuminate them with light of different colors. That's the same thing. Illuminate it with different colored lights. And by the way, as you're driving around in a robot, you could probably get a lot of variation in color just from shadows, etc., even though the sun remains the same color. But if you're driving at night, big difference. Notice when you move, well, those are all, oh shoot, just one sec. Darn it. Oh, darn it. I can't remember what STD stands for. Spectral power density, uniform. Thank you for saying that. Okay. Anyway, let's get past these and talk about more color correction. And this is some simple stuff. And here, what we're doing is, this is the conventional thing that you do in Photoshop if someone gives you a photo and they want it to look better. And this is what's called flat. What it effectively is the equivalent of contrast for a color image. If you look really closely, the dark areas aren't black. And I'll tell you that this is a color corrected one. Notice that the blues, for example, of the flowers are more saturated. I'll talk about how you get from one to the other in a moment. This one, it's light. We darken it. This one, it's dark. We lighten it. And what these are, and lots of times, it's most of the time, a lot of our image processing is done in RGB. Okay, so what do we do with a dark image? The values that are dark, which are the values down here near zero, we want to increase in value. So we pull this transfer curve up for all the colors. We're increasing the intensity for dark areas. What do we do if we have a late image? That means we have too much up near one. We decrease the values. Okay? And what do you do when you have something that's flat? You do both. You notice, you remember how we did a threshold and what that function looked like? If we had our original intensity and our, this would be the original, this would be the output, and we're just doing grayscale, and we would be doing things like that. But if we really want it to go from grayscale to black and white, we did that. Notice that's almost what we're doing. We're taking the high-end colors, so we're making brights brighter, we're making darks darker. We pull it down to make the darks darker, we pull it up to make the lights lighter, and in effect, you're going towards almost a threshold. Now, with color, you don't want to threshold it, because that would make it a really funny-looking picture. And that would be closer to what they call posterization. Okay? So that's the kind of thing you do there. But that's effectively what all of those curves for tweaking up pictures can do. Yes? In some sense, yes, because we're doing all three the same right now. We're not adjusting color. We're just adjusting intensity. Well, I'm thinking, well, actually, because what I've done is remove the amount of white a bit, yes, that this actually is changing the saturation. Let me think about that, because I think that is just H. It's not changing the chromaticity, which is the color. So let me think about that. But it is changing the perceived amount of white. And that's really all we're doing with both of them. Now, here's the kind of stuff which I personally am not very good at. That's the real color correction. This is how you can pay your way through graduate school. Okay? Processing images. Now, how do you figure out how to change different colors in an image? Part of it is experience. For example, here's one that's too much black, not enough black. That's the original. Correct it. And you can do all of these. The comment is the following. How many people have done color correction in Photoshop? Okay, what do? You usually go for the lights, the darks, and you do a mid-tone correction. Okay? Other things that you can do is if you know one color, at least you can change that. And so, for example, if I have a standard flesh tone, if I know what proportion of red, green, and blue I want for flesh, then I can start changing just one of the component colors. And that's what I'm doing here. You know, this comes up a lot when you take, well, it's more so with film. When you're dealing with film that, for example, is daylight corrected, and you use it under fluorescent lighting. Things like that.
When you buy the backdrop, you get the value of the color.
Yes. And in fact, I didn't bring my gray card with me. But one of the standard things is you either hold up this big chart of all of the different colors and take a picture of it, or you take a gray card and you can get a nice uniform, I think it's an 80% gray card. And for those of you who are really cheap and don't haul gray cards around with you, the back of your wrist is approximately an 80. and it works fairly well. In an emergency, use the back of your wrist. And after all, you do know what your flesh color is. You can also work off of that. But it gives you a reference point in your picture. Because even if the illumination changes, you know that you can come up with what this... Well, you have it under a known illumination. That's the whole idea. You either know the original color or you know the illumination. But you can fix all of these. Now, the next one, again, this is... you can do all kinds of things... and this is a moderately sophisticated image processing, image correction. What this is the original image. It's HS, we go to HSI, we do a histogram equalization. Remember histogram equalization that we did way, way, way back there? We do a histogram equalization on only the intensity of the HSI, because specifically our discussion was you don't want to change the color, you just want to change the brightness of an image. So you can take the intensity image and equalize it, and that's all they did. So you take the original RGD, transform to HSI, do a histogram equalization just on the eye, and then transform back to RGB or whatever to display it. So this is what it looks like. And you can see that, yes, I mean, you can see differences right here in stuff that's lighter and brighter. And, of course, you know, it didn't end up coming out uniform because we've got lots of population down here. It spread it out, but I'm not a big fan of equalization, at least automatic equalization. Okay, and then what was done is they went in and did a saturation adjustment to change the colors just a little bit. And I guess I'm not enough of an artist. You can see the purple a little bit there. But artists really get into this. And if a real Photoshop person has processed a photo, chances are it's much better than the original. Now, back to ordinary image processing. Elena image. And right now we're not going to do anything. That's just the R, the G, and the B. The particular one has a lot of R in it. Not as much G. And blue is definitely low. By the way, anyone in here scan photos to restore them? Or do anything like that? Old photos? Advice. Even if you have an old photo and it's not color, scan it in red, green, blue anyway. Why? Well, what you'll find is when you look at stuff, and if it's messed up, scratched, whatever, faded, it may look different under the three different colors. And what you often want to do, and this is a standard technique, you look at the red image, the green image, and the blue image. You look at those channels and say which one of them does look the best. Sometimes just the reflectance is fairly different. And this, by the way, is especially true if it's the real world and we're looking at vegetation. Green stuff looks different. Significantly different in different color bands. Now we're going to start doing some stuff with all of this. That's the RGB. That's the HSI. The HSI, very reasonable. I mean, you recognize that immediately. Do you recognize the H and the S? The H especially not. The S you do. Now, interestingly, that says, since that S image is so bright, that says that a lot of the colors are saturated. Now, see, are you thinking in HSI space? Do you look at that and say those colors are saturated? It takes a lot of practice. Now, image processing. Remember all of that stuff way, way long time ago? Spatial image processing, mask. I bet you never thought we were going to come back to that stuff. How do you do spatial processing on a color picture? Well, here's a interesting thing. Smoothing. That's all on that original image. How about if I take, is it a 5x5? So I'm just going to take a 5x5 mask, and I'm going to go in and apply it to each of these three images. So I'm going to run a 5x5 averaging over this, then over this, then over this, and add all the three images back together to display a color image. That's what I did here. Actually, I didn't do it. Gonzalez did. Okay. Now, how about if I average an HSI image? All I did, or all that was done here, is we averaged only the intensity. Because one of the usual big things is when you process an image, you don't want to change the color. So in HSI, the eye is independent of the color. So we're just going to touch the intensity. And you can see some subtle differences, and here they just subtract them so that you can see, yes, there are differences. Now, which one do you want to do and why? That's going to depend upon your application. You may like one better than the other. I'm personally, whoops. You know, to me, they're both fine. I don't have any particular use for those averaged images. But if you did, then you might want to pick one versus the other. Now, how about doing a Laplacian, a derivative? Now, same general idea. I've got the R, the G, and the B channel. I apply a Laplacian. Remember, del squared 2, R, G, and B, and put it back together. Over here, this is an HSI. I apply the Laplacian only to the eye. You see a fair bit of difference in those. Much more so, I think, even than in the other one. There are a lot of subtle differences. And it really gets into what's a color edge. That's a real hard thing. Now, here's some more interesting color image processing. And this is now potentially starting to get closer to what you might want to do. Again, this is a NASA thing. And they're doing something called segmentation. We haven't talked about segmentation yet. That's in chapter 10 of our book. But we're going to talk about it pretty soon because you might want to use it. Segmentation is a process by which you take a region in an image and you label it as say all of these pixels belong to one object. So for example, maybe I would have a something like that, and this would constitute my overall picture frame. So I've got sort of a shaded ball in the middle. Segmentation would somehow consist of me saying, or rather, the software I write saying, okay, everything in there is object number one. And if I know that now, then I can come in here and say, oh, well, what's the average color of this object? What is the average center of it? And actually, you can get into a lot of more interesting things. You can talk about the perimeter, the area, the ratio of the perimeter to the area. You can talk about the compactness of an object. You can do projections onto the different axes. And it turns out, by the way, these can be used an awful lot for feature recognition. It turns out that projections, certain ones, are invariant under object rotations and stuff. So there's a lot of stuff in Chapter 10 that we haven't gotten to. This part right here that we want to do is very simple. Suppose I have regions of a picture that are red. How can I identify them? Now, there is one other important thing in segmentation, which is not going to come in here yet. Connectivity is absolutely important, because if I have one pixel over here that is gray and it's not connected to that, I don't care about it. It's not part of object number one. Connectivity implies that at the pixel level, I've got some definition of connection. And it could be that I'm just taking four connectivity, north, south, east, west. It could be that I've extended it to a diagonal, maybe only one diagonal, or maybe both. So I might have four, six, or eight connectivity at the basic level. Usually four is the simplest one to think about, but in a real image, you may want to use six or eight to get the right results. And I see I'm basically out of time. I'm not going to say too much other than this is done in HSI space, which is probably a complicated way to do it. They do the HSI. They threshold the S. They want saturated colors. So they threshold it, then multiply the thresholded S by the H to get this image. Okay, here's the histogram of it. Okay, and basically they're saying, oh, these are all the pixels of the same color. They call it segmentation. It is not exactly correct, because there's no connectivity applied. Okay, but they're all the same color, and the majority of them are together. This will lead us into segmentation. But don't worry, we're going to finish up color. We still have a ways to go. But this is starting to become useful, because now white lines, red lines, yellow lines, asphalt, color differences may be useful to your project.